Mr. O'Sullivan, Reel 5. Right, Mr. O'Sullivan, we're talking about the sights on the Bren gun and the Lee Enfield rifle and how they were adjusted. If you could just continue.
Well, the Lee Enfield, the slid the sight, it was like a, what can I say? It was a slide rule on top of the barrel, you know, and they slid it up, which lifted the back sight up or down, according to where you put it on the slide rule, 300 yards, 500 yards.
And that was marked on the sight
itself?
It
was marked on the sight itself. And you all sighted through, the front sight was rigid, it was fastened, but the back sight was moving. And you just slid it up to 300 yards, 500 yards, whatever, and the sight moved up or down according to...
And what about on the Bren gun? Off the tape you said the Bren gun was different.
But the Bren gun had a pop-up sight, and it had adjustable slide on it as well, which wanted for 100 yards, 300 yards, or whatever.
Did they teach you how to estimate distances, and how did they do
yes,
that?
Yes, they did.
How did they do that?
We went out onto a... went on a route march, I thought, three platoons, and we got to this wood on the hillside, and the platoon sergeant said, right, now there's a man over there, 500 yards away, where is he? He said he's visible with ordinary sight. And you had to try and find him. Now, that man's 300 yards. Ah, you're getting that big oak tree. That's it, that's approximately 500 yards away, or 1,000 yards away. And that's how our particular sergeant did it. We would send, you see, there was a sergeant, a corporal, and a lance corporal. Now, we'd send a corporal out, and he had to go to a certain distance, and he'd send the lance corporal to a different distance, and he had to pick them out. But he was in battle dress, stood in wooded area. They weren't hidden, they weren't deliberately hiding themselves, but you had to just, with corporal Pickering, and look for them, which you just to be 300 yards or 500 yards away. And it's a very hard thing to do, especially across a valley or something like that. It's not so bad when you see them. I mean, down the road, it was easy enough. You could count the lampposts and you could say, well, that's 300 yards, and you could be within 10 yards, and that's all you needed to be. But over the distance of open land, it's a different thing altogether.
So was that something that you had trouble with?
Yeah.
Did some recruits have more trouble than others, or did you?
Well, you found some recruits was better at one thing than another, obviously. Some lads have played football, cricket, or they were better at, they were physically fitter than we were because we had never played football or anything like that. And sports, they encourage sports in the army, cross country running, boxing, but we never had any football or cricket because there was nowhere to play it.
So as a recruit, they'd started, you want cross country running?
Yeah, I did cross country running. I won a cup for cross country running and one for boxing when I was in the Lincoln. And I was...
Was that after you posted to the battalion?
Yeah. No, that was at Lincoln Barracks.
Mm-hmm. Could you talk about that then?
We did the cross country run was... At Lincoln was a race course, there was a race course at that time of day. And the run was from the barracks, and there'd never be 2,000 men set off. Different platoons, sometimes different regiments. The 6th Regiment or the 2nd, 5th, or all at Lincoln Barracks. Cross country run, and they'd all have a team. Cross country is always the same, isn't it? The first man on his number, he gets 1 point, the second man on gets 2, and then with the lowest number of points after the 7 men's coming, are the winners. We went a bit on this cross-country run. It had been raining, and that one of our men, I think in the climb, hit him, jumped across a dike, lost his shoe, and spent the best part of an hour trying to get his shoe back. So he, with seven men all, with six men all, and he was doing it. So we didn't get anywhere that time. It was to be Taylor, had our platoon, myself, Mayfield, Beedham. Seven men used to run for the whole platoon had to run, but there were seven men nominated to represent the team. We won a time or two.
What about the boxing? How did that come in?
Well, it seems most things in the army then days. I said, we want seven boxers. We want them to put a certain weight. You want a lightweight, heavyweight, weight, you know. And I volunteered for boxing. I only got knocked out once, and it's an experience.
Had you boxed before?
No. We had a bloke who was a battalion boxer. He was a good boxer, who was a PT instructor. And he said, you've not to worry about. He said, you're never going to get hurt because they use the gloves, 15-ounce gloves, are they, in the amateur world? Well, they're fairly big gloves, and they can't really hurt you. And he said, and not only that, he said, if you go boxing, you're not on the parade ground, are you? If you do cross-country running, you're not on the parade ground. You're getting the spit of sport instead of having to be marching up and down. So I volunteered for cross-country running, and I volunteered for boxing. And the first boxing match we had was against players, Nottingham, Cigarette Factory at Nottingham. They played mainly a sports club. And they came to Lincoln Barracks, and I boxed a lad called Matthews. He was from the players club. And he knocked me out in the second round. And about 3 months later, who came into the barracks as a recruit? Mr. Matthews. And we joined the same boxing team. He boxed for the company as well, right? For the regiment. But it was a cross-country run. It was true. If you went in for something like that, you avoided a lot of miserable jobs, you know, like cookhouse fatigues. You didn't have to do fatigues if you were in the boxing team. You didn't have to do fatigues if you were in the cross-country team.
What about your religion as a Catholic? Was there a church parade?
Yes, that but we never went.
Why not?
The church parade was always for the Church of England. Salvation Army, Church of Roman Catholics, Protestant, Methodists, you had to go to church, but you went on your own. And there was a couple of us who was Roman Catholics, certainly now, but we used to go into Lincoln. We didn't always go to church, but we had to go into Lincoln. We never went on church parade as such.
So that was another way you could escape into Lincoln, yeah. Saying you were going on church.
Well, the church parade was marched, the band and the platoons marched to church. They went into Lincoln. Lincoln's a cathedral town, isn't it? If the church parade went to Lincoln, they marched. But we fell in the morning, in the church parade. And when they said, RCs, Methodists, Salvation Army, fall out, we just did a smart right turn, and that one we had to go to church on road. But we got to that.
Right. I should have asked you earlier, but what was your opinion of army food at this stage?
Very good. It was. It was very good. We were rushing the tone. You know, I mean, in the morning we had cornflakes, liver and thick gravy, bread and butter, and there was no restriction. You could have as much as you want. Tea with sugar, you could have porridge, And Amina told me that they weren't on those little rations. It was very good.
So you had no complaints?
No complaints at all. And I mean, at dinner time, there was always a dinner and a pudding. Always. And a good... I don't mean it was gourmet food, but there was plenty of it. There was sufficient, you know, and it was well fed.
Did everybody feel that? Because at this stage, did you have an NCO that would come round and ask if there was any complaints?
Oh, yes.
Did that
come round? Well, yeah, not that an NCO, an officer. An officer would come round.
And did anybody complain?
Yes, no, not really. And you really, I mean, the war had been a couple of years when I went to the army, and most of the other lads had suffered the same rations, you know. And I mean, lots of lads give up sugar for the parents' sake, or meat because the dad was at work, or, you know. I mean, but when you went in the army, it was there. I mean, you could have liver and that for breakfast. And I mean, it was really good. I enjoyed army food.
Now, we're still at the at your basic training period. We've talked about the Lionfield rifle and the Bren gun. What were the other weapons that you were introduced to at this stage? Did you do grenade training this stage?
Oh, yes, we did grenade training, yeah.
Could you describe that?
Oh, yes, that was fun, that was. We went down, there was a range particularly, and there were some pits dug. And the idea was that the sergeant would be in a dugout, and he'd have maybe 7 or 8 men in a trench behind him, and we'd take it in turns. And the idea was to hold a grenade in your hand, pull the pin, and throw it into one of the holes, which would be so far in front of you. Both of them did it on no bother. It was like trying to just throw a cricket ball, throw anything into that hole. If you got in the hole, you got to pass into Lincoln. But there was always somebody who would drop one in front of me. And then it was everybody down until it, because it was three seconds in there between, was it 7? You know, after throwing, release the pin and throwing it, maybe 7, I don't know what it is actually, I forget. But everybody down while it went up.
Were you nervous about handling these things?
No, I was never nervous.
What about your fellow recruits?
Well, some of them were. I mean, that's why the fellow dropped it. Because he was frightened of it. He'd already stripped a Mills bomb, you know, in practice. We'd stripped it down, inserted the detonator and put the pin back in and that sort of thing. But it was only a dummy. It wasn't a live grenade, was it? It was just, they just showed how it worked. And the segments on it, what army segments it usually broke into. And so when it came to throwing it, it never bothered me. I was only one away from in the hole anyway.
About how far could you throw one?
I don't know, about from here to past that house, halfway down that yard.
And how far is that in yards, do you think?
About 20 yards, 20, 25 yards. With any accuracy, I mean, you could throw them, but to throw them with any accuracy, you had to be, really, it was a thing of practice.
And was that the only grenade that you were encountered at this stage?
Yeah,
was the Mills bomb?
Yeah.
But
the Mills bomb we could fire from a rifle as well.
And did they teach you
the same Mills bomb?
Did they teach you to do
yeah,
that?
Yeah, you had an adapter on your rifle.
Could you describe that?
No, I can't. I just can't think of it. I can't imagine.
But you were?
It was like a cup, and the Mills bomb went into the cup, and you fired your rifle, and it fired the Mills bomb out. The bullet fired the Mills bomb out.
And so that was part of your basic training as well?
Yeah.
What about the boys' anti-tank rifle? Was that still around at this stage?
It was still around when I was in Africa.
So were you taught this?
Yeah.
Could you describe that?
Well, it's about from here to that city,
how long is that?
8 foot. It had a padded shoulder piece, and the anti-tank shell, or whatever you like, went in from the muzzle, from the muzzle, and it didn't fire through the boys. And you pulled it and you fired it like a, something. It only had a single trigger. It fired once. It didn't, you know, it fired once and then it had to be reloaded. And it had a kick on it like a mule. God, it had a kick. Unbelievable. How anybody ever hit a tank with one of them, I don't know. You only ever saw it fired once. But they were, you know, that was in Africa. Mm. So we'll leave that one later, don't we?
You only saw it fired once in anger?
Yeah.
So that was part of your initial training as well. So so I suppose that you spent most time with the Leigh Enfield.
Yeah.
And did you spend a lot of time with the Bren as well?
We carried the Bren. We always had a Bren in the platoon. But most of the time we only carried it. I mean, West Front had a route march. You'd have a Bren gun. And somebody, and the Bren gun weighed 23 pounds, I think. Somebody carried the Bren gun. And everybody else had rifles. The Bren gun carrier would, after so long, he would hand it over to me and he would take my rifle. So that we shared the weight of the Bren gun, you know. Somebody would carry the pouches of ammunition for a Bren gun. They fitted into your pouches. But it was, the weight was distributed between the platoon as evenly as possible. Because there was only, if the man had a Bren gun, obviously he didn't have a rifle. So.
Were you introduced to the mortar at this stage, the 2-inch mortar?
No.
You didn't do any training on that?
We were never introduced to it at all.
Not at all?
We had live mortar fire over us, you know, show us how it worked and what it did, but we never actually fired one.
Mm. What about gas training? Was that part of your initial?
Yeah, very small, very small. Gas.
Could you describe that?
Yeah, we wore the gas mask, we always carried a gas mask. Even when you come on leave, you carried your gas mask, same as the civilians did. It was a different type of mask. But the only thing we did with actual gas training, we put the gas mask on and went into a tent where mustard gas had been released. And you had to walk through the tent, and when you got to a certain MCO, he would pat you on the shoulder like that, and you had to take your gas mask off and then make your way out of the tent so that you got a taste of the gas without it being too bad.
How did that affect
you? Went to the VDI room. But I mean, that's only gas training we've had. We knew we had lectures on gas, you know, mustard gas, and what would happen if it was released while I was in the trenches. It would win control or no control. I mean, that's one of the reasons why gas wasn't used, was because they couldn't control the weather. I mean, it released gas that goes towards you, it could suddenly turn around and blow back to the people and released it. So, I mean, we didn't get any gas from the Second World War, did we?
You've talked about route marches, and you've mentioned a little bit about during your rifle training and the estimation of range and so on. Did you do any other field craft during this initial 6 weeks, like learning to read the terrain and so on?
Yeah, we went out into Burton. There's a village called Burton just outside Lincoln. We went out there and we dug trenches, put up 2-man tents, cooked, maybe for the day. We never went out for the day. We had to dig the trenches, and we also do anti-tank trenches. But the trouble was that at Burton, the area had been used that many times by the battalion, by the Lincolns, that you nearly always found a trench what was easy digging, you know. It had been used that many times. But they had to dig a, and also there was always a tank come across the trenches while you was in them. so as to give you the confidence that in a slit trench which was 18 inches wide, the tank wouldn't harm you.
And how deep would it be?
Oh, deep, so you could stand on the bottom and see out.
And did he teach you how to dig these things? Was there a special technique?
Oh, yeah, they didn't teach you how to dig them, they tell you what to dig. You want a trench, and you don't put the soil in front, on your front, you put the soil behind. Because otherwise, the only time you put the soil in front was if it was rocky, you know, you couldn't dig down 4 or 5 foot. You put the stuff in front of you so that it became a, what do you call them? Sort of a breastwork sort of thing.
Yeah.
But usually you put it behind you so you had a clear line of vision.
Is there anything else in this early period of training that
we have? A force route march of 10 miles.
Could you describe that?
We did it from Kirsten. They trucked us out to Kester. We went out in trucks. And we had used equipment, rifle, your haversack, gas mask, and they couldn't get its brain gun, and this radio. Somebody had to carry the radio, and a signal. And we had to cover 10 miles in less than 2 hours with full equipment. We did it. We was buggered after it like that, but we did it. And it was run a bit, walk a bit, swap things over, you carry the radio, you carry the brain gun, and we had no NCOs in charge. It was a platoon of all wrong recruits, and it was just said, Mayfield, that's your troop. You know, and there was the people in charge was raw recruits, and we were all out of the same platoon, obviously. And that's how we did that. And the same thing when, if we went out on a night exercise, they would take us out into an area and say, right, you're 4 miles from barracks, Taylor's in charge, make your own way back to barracks. And this is at night. No street lights, no, you just have to make your own way back to barracks. And they'd always put somebody in charge. And if you've been in charge one time, then somebody else had it to do. The time I was in charge, I got them lost. And we took 3 hours to get back to barracks. And then even then, I had to get Taylor, who was a, as I say, was a farm lad and poacher and that sort of thing. He said, come on, Sullivan, for Christ's sake, let's get back to barracks. Follow me. And that's how I got back to barracks.
Did they teach?
I had no idea where we were.
Did they teach you things like map reading and compass?
They taught us about the stars. We didn't have any compass reading. We didn't have any compass reading. They showed us how a compass worked, but we didn't have one. I mean, not on a platoon. Mm. Told us how to find the North Star, and how to find out the moss grows on the south side of trees. Oh no, south. Yeah. So if you found a tree with moss on it, the whichever side was. Well, they found out. They taught us how to find the North Star and how to head north.
Now, you were in the army, and you hadn't really had any choice about that, and you just allowed fate to take its, you know, just to decide where you went. But now you're in the army, and you were in the middle of your recruit training. Obviously, there were different jobs, different roles within the army. Had you given any thought to that, what you might want to do?
I wanted to be a cook.
And what happened?
I got to be a cook eventually, but I got to be a sniper first. Because they didn't. When we was at Lincoln, all the food apart from a 3-day exercise we did with the monks, you know, in the mess hall. The 3-day exercise, I was the cook, me and another monk. We built a fire and we had dixies, kind of big pans, and we cooked on an open fire and we had rations from the cookhouse. And we also got mushrooms and John Taylor got us a rabbit. And that all went into the pot. And everybody had a mess tin and they took that look. And very often the tea was made in the same pot as what the stew had been made in. Swirled out, because we didn't have a lot of water. All we had was the canteens of water that the men carried. And we had to make a stew, we had to take a lot of canteens of water. So we had a lot of, and then you wanted the rest of the water for making tea. So we had a lot of water left to wash dixies out to make tea. So very often the tea had a film of grease on it, which nobody bothered about. But the rabbit stew was very good. And we pinched tomatoes as well, out of people's garden.
Did the people find out about this?
We might have done, but
it never got back to.
We once got into trouble for. Well, that again was when we moved down to the forest, so we knew that.
Now, also at this stage, you mentioned these exercises where they were given the recruits the initiative to lead the platoon back. I mean, had you given any thought to possible promotion or take an extra responsibility? Or had other members of the squad thought about things like officer selection and things like that? Was there talk of that at the time?
Nobody thought of officer selection, but there was Mayfield, Jeff Mayfield, was very interested in promotion. He had two brothers, and one was a sergeant major, and one was a sergeant, so we wanted to. And he was very keen. When we first went on to training, when we first got the Lanfield rifle, the sergeant major took us into some rough ground, and he said, "Now, the next person you see is an enemy. What are you going to do about it?" And all of a sudden, the corporal ran in front of us about 100 yards away. What did we do? We chased him. And the sergeant said, "Halt!" He said, "If that was an enemy, what would you do?" He said, "You would bloody shoot him." He said, "You wouldn't go running after him either." But automatically, we all chased after him. He said, if you'd got down on one bloody knee and looked as though I was going to fire a rifle, I could have understood it, but he said every one of you said it was chasing. But it was a natural reaction. Because, let's face it, we weren't used to firing at anybody, were we? So, and then sort of, the sergeant major was an old guardman, and he was a really good sergeant major. He knew how to get bloke's confidence. He was never a bully. Discipline was strict with him. But it was a fair discipline. And if you made a genuine mistake, that was all right. But if you made a stupid mistake, then you knew about it. And he would stand in front of the rest of the room and say, "This sort of a lad will let you down when you get in the real thing. Make sure that he doesn't get him on the other one." But he was an understanding sort of a bloke, even though he was a regular with him.
What about your other NCOs within the trainer platoon?
Well, one of them was a bit sniffy, the sergeant was a bit of a bully. Corporal Pickering was a very good lad. He was like the sergeant major, he knew that we was in there. Because we had to be.
Can you remember the sergeant major's name?
No, I can't. I've often thought about him.
So Sergeant Smith, how would his kind of bullying side, how would that show itself?
Well, he would do... they would put young Jenkins for nothing, you know, just because he was in a bad mood. He'd maybe have 5 men on Jenkins, and there was no Jenkins for him to do. I mean, I don't know.